news and interviews from across the world and right here in the central Susquehanna Valley. This is WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Rob Sanders, our fabulous producer. We very much appreciate his help and hard work. He also takes care of the archive. So if you're one of the many people downloading the WKOK Sunrise podcast, thank Rob as you click on that and download it, because he makes sure the archives are in perfect order as well. On the news line with us now, we're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Mann. He's a professor of religious studies at Susquehanna University. He's also the department chair, so he bears that burden. Helped to oversee the switch to online learning for that department and probably other schools and activities too. Good morning, Dr. Mann. Thanks for calling in today.
Hey, Mark. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing fabulously. Thank you so much for calling in today. I do appreciate it. Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell me about the online experience on campus these days. Give us, in the springtime, you can typically ask for a turnaround tour and talk about a lot of kids and activities and excitement and, of course, the springtime beauty of the campus. What do you see today?
What I see is a lot of faculty and a lot of students trying to figure out how to do online courses and to make it work as well as possible. And doing it halfway through the semester was certainly a pretty significant challenge and a steep learning curve for a lot of us. But so far, so good. We're making progress, and I think all of us are sort of getting our feet under us and making things work pretty well now.
What might be a takeaway lesson from this on campus and in terms of the switch to online learning and what has happened?
I'm sorry, Mark, you're breaking up again. What was the end of your question?
I said, what would be a takeaway lesson from what has happened on campus and globally?
I suppose there's a lot of lessons that people can take. I think for me, what I realized going through all of this is that while there's an increase in online courses being offered around the country and around the world, there's really no substitute for being in a classroom and being in a community when it comes to education. I find myself really missing the classroom and the students, but also realizing I can do fairly well on online teaching, but there really is no substitute for that person-to-person contact that you get.
What is that contact? Tell me what that person-to-person contact does.
Well, I've been putting my lectures up online, and so I've been creating my lectures that I've given over the years and putting them on YouTube. But not being able to have interplay with people, not being able to see their reactions, to get their questions immediately, to not be able to have that rapport between faculty and students, has a pretty significant impact on how best to respond in the classroom and how to balance things out and how to bounce around with videos and images that I want to display during the class. And while you can do what's called synchronous teaching, right, you can get everyone together on a Zoom meeting. There's advantages of that, but there's some real disadvantages. It just doesn't create the mutual exchange that I think is really necessary for good learning.
All right, well, and that's going to make it, you'll probably have a greater appreciation for that, I would think. Anyway, would that be true? You'll have a greater appreciation next time you do get to talk with students in the classroom?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the times that I do get to interact with them, some online or in emails, I'm happy that we already established a bit of a rapport the first half of the semester, and I value that. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back.
Well, it should be interesting to see what the new normal will be in the fall. Who knows at this stage? We just don't quite know. It's hard to even envision. Well, you and I talked about the fact that we would have this conversation about political correctness on campus prior to the COVID-19 outbreak, so that sort of changed the whole direction of our interview. But we can still focus on that. This will certainly still be a brought up and talked about topic when classes resume normally. When we talk about political correctness on campus, what are the symptoms of this?
The symptoms? I think that, I mean, maybe it's first good to get a better handle on what people mean by this, because sometimes people mean different things by the term political correctness. I was in college when this really began. I graduated from Kenyon College in 1992, and this is when the whole phenomenon of political correctness and referring to it was starting to make its appearance. And really what we're talking about here is when you have certain reasonable or mainstream conservative opinions that people believe should be silenced. and that can be a real problem on campus. Today, people are using it a little differently, and I think that's contributing to some of the confusion. So people today use politically correct as an adjective for polite sometimes, and as if slurs are politically incorrect. And I think that's a misuse that people have made of political correctness, so that if you use just insulting language and then you say, oh, well, that's just politically incorrect, no, that's just rude. The conversation has gotten a little bit confused as people have equated it with polite. But the real issue is when alternate opinions, specifically conservative opinions, are being silenced on campus.
Now, you're a conservative, so do you find that you occasionally have pushed back against any of your ideas?
Oh, well, sure, but I should have pushed back against my ideas. All faculty should have pushed back against their ideas. When I'm teaching in the classroom, I keep my opinions to myself, and I try to be as objective and fair as I can. But there are other places where I do express my opinions, and things that I've written and chances that I've had to speak. And then, yeah, absolutely there should be pushback. If there's a weakness in my argument or if I left something out, people should push back against that. But, of course, that should apply to everyone. And it only applies to everyone when you have multiple viewpoints represented.
At Susquehanna University, have there been cases when students or faculty have pushed back against maybe somebody who was speaking on campus or some idea that was being talked about?
Oh, yeah. I think as an example of where Susquehanna does things right, you may remember that a couple of years ago, Susquehanna SU Democrats and the SU Republicans both brought in speakers and both supported each other. And the SU Democrats brought in Ed Rendell, and the SU Republicans brought in Ben Shapiro. And both were given an opportunity to speak, and both then had a question and answer period and experienced, you know, students and others challenging them on some of their positions. And I think Susquehanna generally does a good job, and our senior administration does a good job of supporting that sort of exchange.
What about becoming fully empowered citizens? Is it not ideal for us to hear all viewpoints?
I don't know if I would say all viewpoints, because after a while there's just too many, right? Especially today with what's on social media, you'd never get to all viewpoints. But I think you have an obligation to, if you're going to consider yourself an educated individual, to at least have a good grasp of the fundamental different viewpoints that are being expressed in a society, and certainly what's mainstream. If I can add one other thing to that, lately over this break I've been reading John Stuart Mill again, and in his remarkable piece on liberty, he says this, and I wish this was carved in stone and placed at the center of every campus. He says, "He who knows only his own side of the case knows little of that. His reasons may be good, and no one may have been able to refute them, but if he is equally unable to refute the reasons on the opposite side, if he does not so much as know what they are, he has no ground for preferring either opinion." And I think that, yeah, Mill is absolutely right. If you're going to be educated, you need to know and hear from representatives of different viewpoints.
How might that translate to the political dialogue? We keep talking about the fact that in this nation we are divided, maybe less interested in hearing the opinions or sort of actively listening to opinions on the other side of these issues.
You know, with the appearance of social media and its dominance in our lives, I think what happens is it's so easy for us to create echo chambers for ourselves, and we surround ourselves with people who think like us and express the ideas that we like. And it's getting even worse, because in the past you could pick, you know, the social media sites or the news sites that matched your ideology and just stick with them. But now we have the computers feeding us the information that they know that we want to hear and that we like. And so it even encourages this more, where we end up in our isolated little echo chambers. And if we don't have our exposure to people who are representing other ideas, if we don't hear them express their opinions, then this further polarizes us. And we see this more and more. And it's a really big concern. If you're going to have a well-informed citizenry, if you're going to have a functional democracy, you need to be aware of multiple perspectives. Otherwise, you don't even know your own perspective.
Well said. So that's that important touchstone quote personified. You have to, in order to fully know your opinion, you have to know the opinion of others. Well, we're just about out of time, but there's lots more to say about this. So please give us a glimpse of what we haven't touched on, what's important in the discussion that maybe I haven't asked you about.
I think that when we talk about liberal bias on college campuses, I think that's a real thing. If you look at the distribution of conservatives and liberals in college faculties and administrations, that's very real. But there's a difference between bias, which all of us have and we can try to overcome, and any sort of attempt to silence other voices. And that silencing may be explicit, like disinvitations, but it can also take the form of intimidation or denying someone a platform. And so I think we need to differentiate the fact that, yeah, there's liberal bias on campuses that we need to address. And the more egregious problem of political correctness, which is seeking to silence people before they're even allowed to express their opinions.
All right. Well, please, is there a reading list or someplace I can get more information about this emphasizing an open mind? Is there anyone else, maybe a recommended reading?
Oh, that was the one question I wasn't prepared for. if you really want something, I could put it together and email it to you, but I'd rather think about that to come up with some good recommendations than something right off the top of my head.
And who did you say you're rereading right now, the one good author?
Oh, John Stuart Mill, his treatise on liberty, one of the greatest things written in the last couple centuries.
All right, fabulous. Well, please come back again. There's going to be more to talk about. Post-pandemic conversations are going to be as vibrant as ever, and I, too, can't wait to go back to visit good professors on campus and do interviews in person and talk to students. Thank you so much, Professor Mann. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you so much, Mark. Have a good day.
Thank you. This is Dr. Jeffrey Mann. He's a professor and department chair in the Department of Religious Studies at Susquehanna University, talking about the online experience on campus these days, political correctness, and, of course, a good reading list.